To be with you. Hope that everyone had a fine afternoon. And good to have all of our visitors with us. We're delighted that you are here. Glad that you could be with us tonight as we seek to worship God. If I say to you the term the devil, what comes to your mind? There's a lot of concepts that come to people's minds that often are biblical, but often not. Sometimes people have ideas in this world about the devil that are sort of a mixture of what the Bible says and what the Bible doesn't say, and it's all kind of wrapped up together. Some people, when they think of the devil, they think of some person in a red suit or with horns or a pitchfork or something and a forked tail of some kind, and some kind of comical picture like that. Sometimes the misconceptions about the devil are much more serious than that. Sometimes people have the idea that the devil is co-eternal with God and that somehow he can thwart God's plans. Sometimes people have the concept that the devil can make us do things against our will. And of course, the Bible doesn't teach anything of the sort. John Milton's epic poem, Paradise Lost, is a marvelous, marvelous work of poetry, and yet it has helped foster some misconceptions about the devil and hell that the Bible certainly doesn't teach. The idea that somehow hell is this domain of the devil and he rules in hell and he would rather rule in hell than serve in heaven. As Milton said, that concept is as unbiblical as it can be. The Bible teaches that hell is that place of eternal torment that God prepared for the devil and his angels. It is certainly not a place over which Satan rules. So there are a lot of misconceptions that people have about the devil. And the Bible doesn't have a lot to say about the devil, but I would like tonight to see if I can't focus our attention on the main conception, it seems to me, that the Bible is wanting us to have about the devil. And I think it is all presented for us here in the book of Job in the first couple of chapters. I'd like to read these verses here from Job chapter 1. Verse 6 says, "There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. The Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job?' Then Satan answered the Lord, 'Does Job fear God for nothing?'" That's how the book of Job begins, with this framework. The sons of God, that is the angels that God created, assembling around God on his glorious throne. And the Lord then asking one of them, who was identified as Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job?" That designation, Satan, it's really not so much a personal name as a description. In fact, in the original Hebrew, the definite article is there. It really is literally saying the Satan. And the Hebrew word is Satan. And it means adversary. And so really what this passage is saying is that when the sons of God, the angels of God, assembled around God's throne, one of them, the adversary, had this conversation with God. And God asked him, "Have you considered my servant Job?" And the adversary, the Satan, the adversary said, "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Do you understand the question that this adversary was asking? He was saying, "This man Job, who appears, Lord, to be faithful to you, who appears to fear you and to be doing your will, it's only because you've been good to him. It's only because you've blessed him." But as the story unfolds, the adversary says, Lord, if you will allow me to afflict him and take away all of these blessings which you've poured upon him, he will absolutely no longer be faithful to you. His true colors will come forth. And in fact, the Satan says, it will even be at the point eventually where he will curse you to your very face. The concept of Satan in the Bible is this concept of an adversary who is saying to God, the great judge who sits upon his judicial throne, that human beings are not what they appear. They may appear to be faithful, but they really are not deep down in their heart. And so this adversary stands against us and wants to accuse us before God and impugn us and question whether or not we really are faithful to God. When you look at the various designations that the Bible gives for the devil, there are several of them. I won't try to list all of them, but of course one of them is this Hebrew term Satan or Satan, the adversary, as we've just talked about. And even when we think about another designation that the Bible gives in Genesis chapter 3, for example, the serpent who tempted Eve and deceived Eve, I think even there we need to appreciate the concept in all of this that the Bible is trying to get us to see. The concept is not that somehow Satan or the serpent is equal with God and is some adversary of God in the sense that he can thwart God and all of that. It really isn't that concept at all. The concept, even here in Genesis chapter 3, where he's referred to as the serpent, the concept is that he can deceive us, even as he deceived Eve. And so God says this is so, but he can perpetrate some lies, some deception, and people just like Eve will believe that, and they will say, here's what God says, I'm not going to believe that, I'm going to believe this. And in that way, his adversarial charge against us is, see, they're not going to be faithful to you. As long as there's some opposing concept, they will latch on to that and they won't believe what you've said, God. And in this case here in Genesis chapter 3, that was the tack that Satan used when, as the serpent, he deceived Eve. And then you look at what the Bible, or another designation the Bible gives for him in Matthew chapter 4 and verse 5, and just numerous places the New Testament refers to him as the devil. And that Greek word diabolos is a Greek word that literally means accuser. And again, it's this same concept of here is the adversary, almost like a courtroom setting. And he's this adversary who stands against us, and he's accusing us before God. And he's saying that we are people who are absolutely guilty before God. We don't serve him. If we have been serving him, it's only because of certain things going our way. And his concept, his charge against us, is that if certain things are put in our path, then we will falter, we will not serve God, we will disown him, and we will go our own way. That's the concept, the fundamental concept that the Bible wants us to see about this individual, this angel that God created, who, yes, rebelled against God, but now is our adversary, now is our accuser. The concept is not that he can somehow make us do anything contrary to our will. He doesn't have power like that. He's not equal with God, and he can't thwart God. But what God allows him to do, and only what God allows him to do, that's what he can do. And here's what God allows him to do. God allows him to allow error to be out there to deceive us. Will we trust in God or believe the error? Or he allows other kinds of problems to afflict us. And he accuses us before God and says, well, they won't serve you, God, because these problems are going to cause them to lose faith in you. Or he points out things in the world that are pleasurable that would be against God's will. And he says, God, they're going to follow those things. And I'm going to present these enticements in their path. And they will latch onto those things and ignore your will. That's the kind of accusation that this accuser, this deceiver, this adversary makes in reference to us. And that's the fundamental picture that the Bible paints. Now, there are some other things the Bible has to say about Satan. Not a lot, but some other things that I don't have time to go into right now. But I believe it's very clear that the picture that we've just painted, that we've just talked about, that's the fundamental conception that the Bible presents about Satan. And we need to understand that. That's the concept of Satan that needs to be foremost in our minds whenever we think of the devil or Satan. And so with that concept now in our minds, I want to ask you this question. What accusation is Satan, our adversary, our accuser, what accusation is he making against you? What accusation is he making against you before God? You see, what we need to appreciate is that that scene in Job chapter 1, that's not just some scene that was unique to Job and his circumstances. No, I think the Bible makes it clear that we need to see that kind of scene being the kind of scene that, and the kind of conversation that God would be having with Satan about each one of us. And so the question I want us to think about tonight is, what accusation is Satan making against you? Is Satan, for instance, accusing you right now before God and saying that you won't obey the gospel of Jesus Christ? Is there someone here tonight who has not rendered obedience to the gospel? And Satan, your adversary, he is accusing you before God and saying, he isn't going to obey the gospel. She won't be baptized into Jesus Christ. They're not going to obey the gospel, Lord. They won't do it. Is that the accusation that he's making against you tonight? You know, in Luke chapter 7, verses 29 and 30, you have an interesting passage here talking about the baptism of John, but nevertheless, talking about Jews who were refusing to obey what God had commanded through John in regard to baptism. Luke chapter 7 and verse 29, the text says this, "And when all the people and the tax gatherers heard this, they acknowledged God's justice, having been baptized with the baptism of John. But the Pharisees and the lawyers rejected God's purpose for themselves, not being baptized by John." Here are people who had God's prophet issue that commandment from God about the need to be baptized for the remission of their sins, baptized into that baptism that John was commanding for the remission of sins. And a lot of those Jewish people obey. In fact, those common people and the sinners and the tax gatherers, they responded to that. They were willing to acknowledge their sins and even publicly be baptized with the baptism of John in obedience to God. But not the Pharisees, not the religious leaders, not the religious elite. Can't you just picture, through the eye of faith, Satan, the adversary, saying to God, those Pharisees aren't going to obey. They won't respond. They're too prideful. To obey you in baptism would mean you have to acknowledge that you're a sinner. It means you'd have to publicly state and publicly reflect by your baptism that you are a sinner and that you need to repent. They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that, Lord. Can't you just see Satan just accusing them? And when it came to the Pharisees and these religious leaders, that accusation stuck. It was true with them. Because the majority of them would not be baptized. They would not obey God. And that's the way it is with so many people when it comes to the gospel of Jesus Christ. God calls upon us to be baptized into His Son, to acknowledge our sins, to be buried with Christ in baptism. And a lot of people are like Felix, that procurator who Paul gave his defense before. Felix, that procurator who was affected by Paul's message. He was affected by the gospel when Paul talked about righteousness and judgment to come. It scared him. It made him nervous. But he didn't respond. And there's the accuser, there's the adversary saying, he won't respond, and he didn't. And Agrippa was the same way, whether he meant it facetiously or seriously, I don't know. But he said to Saul of Tarsus, almost you persuade me to become a Christian. But he didn't, as far as we know. And so the question I'm going to ask you tonight is that maybe the accusation that Satan is making to the Lord about you right now? That you won't obey the gospel. You'll be like Felix. You'll be like Agrippa. You'll be like those Pharisees. You'll have some reason that you'll give for why, well, now's not the appropriate time, but at a more convenient season, well, then I may be baptized into Jesus. Then I might obey the gospel. But right now, there are other things that just make it not the best thing. That's the very thing that Satan accuses us about before God. Are you going to allow him to be right in your case? You know, in sports, when you want to get the other team's ire up, you trash talk. You say, oh, well, they can't beat us, or they are this way, or they are weak, or they can't beat our defense, or they can't beat our offense, or if we do this, they will crumble. And you know, that kind of language and that kind of talking just kind of gets the ire up of somebody who really has that competitive edge. I wonder if maybe we shouldn't view Satan a little bit more in that way. Because what we need to understand from the Bible picture of things is that the only power that he really has is the power that God gives him. And the power that God gives him is to make these charges and create these circumstances where he says, we're not going to obey. In that situation, in that circumstance, we won't do it. Is that what Satan is accusing you of right now? And is he going to be right? Are you going to come up with some excuse tonight as to why, well, no, you're not going to obey the gospel? Are you going to allow Satan to win in your case? Or maybe is Satan accusing you of this, that you won't last as a disciple? That you won't endure as a disciple? You know, in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus there in the parable of the sower and the soils, he makes it very clear in this text that there's a lot of people who initially will obey his gospel. They'll be baptized into him. They'll become his followers, and yet they won't endure. He talks about the seed that fell upon the rocky soil, or the seed that fell among the thorns. And Jesus gives this explanation of that in Matthew 13 and verse 20. He says, the one on whom seed was sown on the rocky places, this is the man who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy, yet he has no firm root in himself, but is only temporary. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. And the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Is that what Satan is maybe accusing you of before God, maybe even at this moment? Is he saying to God, much like he said about Job, that if God would just allow Satan to put some obstacles in your path, you'll turn away from God. That the only reason why you're serving him now is because your life was good and things have been fine, but as long as he can take something away from you, then you'll blame God for it, or you will give up in your depression, and so you won't last as a disciple. Is that the charge that your adversary is making against you tonight? Or is he making the charge that there are some things of this world that he could put in your path that are more important or will be more important to you than serving God? And is what he's saying to God right now, those things right there, those material things, you allow those things to be experienced, and he or she will quit serving you, God. Is that what Satan is saying about you right now? That your discipleship really won't last? You're the one who's going to determine whether or not Satan's charge against you is going to be correct. You're the one who's going to prove whether or not you are this kind of short-lived disciple, like that seed among the rocky places or among the thorns that just kind of takes root but then withers. You're going to be the one who determines that. Satan says you can't cut it. Satan says you won't endure. Is he right? Well, let me ask you this question. Is Satan making this accusation against you that you won't get up if you fall? I want you to think about that. Is Satan's charge against you that when you fall or you commit some egregious sin, that you don't have the courage, you don't have what it takes to really get back up and start doing what is right? I want you to think about this passage in Luke chapter 22, the occasion of the Last Supper where Jesus is speaking to Peter specifically. And of course, Peter is saying, "Lord, I will not depart from you no matter what happens. I'll be strong and I will never deny you." And in verse 31 of Luke 22, Jesus says to him, "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you like wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith may not fail. And once you have turned again, strengthen your brothers." What Jesus is saying in this passage to Peter is, "Peter, you're making this affirmation that you're going to not deny me and you're going to stand by me. And all the other disciples are making the same kind of bold affirmation." But he says, "Satan has asked God for permission to put you through this test, to sift you like wheat, to prove your faith." And what you see here in the context, Jesus making it very clear that when all of these apostles are sifted like wheat, they initially are going to deny him. In fact, Jesus says explicitly in this passage, "You're all going to fall away from me." But Jesus says, "Simon, I prayed for you. And I prayed for you that you would turn, and that when you have turned after your fall, when you have turned, that then you would strengthen your brothers." You see what Jesus is talking about there? He's talking about a scenario where, as a disciple of Jesus Christ, Peter was going to fail and fail miserably. But would he have the courage and the faith in Jesus to pick himself up afterward? That's all part of Satan's charge. That's all part of Satan's test that the Lord is allowing Satan to put all these disciples of Jesus through. And Peter specifically, Jesus says, "I've prayed that he indeed would turn after he denies me, and ultimately he would strengthen his brothers." And Jesus' confidence was in Peter doing that. Can't you imagine Satan accusing Peter before God and saying, not only is he going to deny Jesus, But he's going to be so distraught about this, he'll never come back. He'll never turn around. But that's not what happened with Peter, is it? Oh, Peter denied him. Peter did fall. He sinned egregiously. He betrayed his Lord and Master. And he went out and wept bitterly when that cock crowed. But what did Peter subsequently do? He got back up on his feet. And he started serving the Lord. And he spent the rest of his life trying to serve the Lord and serve Him faithfully. The exact opposite of the faithless demonstration there in the courtyard of the high priest. He spent his life after that seeking to serve the Lord and to do those things that were right. And Satan may have accused Peter before God and said that Peter will fall and not get back up. But Satan was wrong if he accused him. Because Peter did get back up. And he did strengthen his disciples. And so the question I want us to think about is Satan making this charge against you? That when you sin, that when you fall, that he can make the circumstances such that you won't get back up. You know, he's real successful in that with a lot of people. Sometimes the reason why he's successful is that he can make people feel so bad about their sinfulness that they give up totally and say, well, I can't do this. I can't live as a disciple of Jesus. I can't live as a Christian. And Satan gets people to believe that despite the fact that God in His promise to us is saying that with His power and with His strength, we can accomplish far more than we ever would dream. When God is behind us, we can accomplish great things. Satan, though, wants us to be down and distraught and take the easy way out and just give up. Because we failed him at one point. And a lot of people do give up. Or sometimes what Satan does is he says, Lord, this person is prideful enough that if this person sins and sins egregiously, and especially if it's some kind of public sin, this person is prideful enough, they won't have the humility to turn themselves around. And they'll just give up totally. Or they'll try to just be a disciple in name only, but it'll all just be a sham. And so really, Satan's accusation, I think, with a lot of people is, once they fall, they'll never get back up. And I can see to it that they won't. Is that what Satan is saying about you? Is that the obstacle that he's put in your path? Again, I want to say to us that each one of us, we're the ones who determine how we're going to be and how we're going to respond and whether or not Satan's accusation against us is going to turn out to be true or false. We're going to be the ones who determine whether or not we're going to believe his lies that he puts in our path or whether we're going to believe God's truth. We determine that. We're going to be the one who decides whether or not we're going to have the humility to say, I'm going to do things God's way, and even though I haven't done things God's way in the past, I'm going to start doing it now. We determine that. And Satan may right now be saying to God, he won't do it. He won't turn around. He'll continue to just wallow in his sin. She won't do it, Lord. She'll just continue to go on the way she is, and she won't make a turnaround. Is that what Satan is accusing you of tonight? I hope that you'll think about these things tonight. And I hope whenever you read in the Bible about the devil, that the concept that we're talking about tonight, you'll have this concept in your mind. And you'll see this as the basic idea that God wants us to understand about Satan, our adversary, the devil, our accuser. And I hope that what we will do is we will not allow the adversary to be right about us. No. Make it a false charge. Make his accusation to be an absolute falsehood by putting your trust in God and doing things God's way and not allowing anything that the devil puts in your path to cause you to not serve the Lord the way that you should. The Lord is looking down from heaven and waiting to see what your decision is going to be and whether you will pass the test or not. It's all in your hands. I wonder if there's someone tonight that we can assist in making their life right with God. Don't let Satan be right in your case. Prove him wrong. And you follow the Lord. And if we can help you do that, we'd love to do so while together we stand and sing. Won't you come?